The Cinema Specialists are back, and today we continue making our way through the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and we are talking about Shang-Chi and the Ten Rings and Mean Girls, the musical remake that just came out, our first movie of 2024 that we are discussing. 25th episode of this series. That kind of blew my mind realizing that, because I know I should probably label these with like numbers so that people know. They're in reverse order in the playlist over on YouTube, but man, it's like, we've done 25 of these episodes, and it's kind of crazy to think. We started with Barbie, and we started, and then we did Oppenheimer, and now here we are talking about the Mean Girls remake. A lot of episodes, a lot of movies I never thought I'd be talking about on this podcast, such as The Killer, which we did last week, which if you haven't checked that out, go check out The Killer and Black Widow. I know The Killer was probably the least popular movie we have done, but we really just kind of ran out of ideas, and it just kind of tells you how unsuccessful that movie from David Fincher was, that it's really just not been viewed by many people.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But that's January for you, right? We run into this problem every January when it comes to new releases, because everything kind of gets put on hold until the Oscar nominations are released.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to actually, so next week, we're not going to be doing a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie. We will not be moving forward and going to, what is the next one? We will not the be going Eternals. To Eternals. We will be taking a break, and on Tuesday night, we'll be releasing our Oscar nomination reactions. So we'll be doing that instead, kind of talking, not giving our predictions of what's going to happen, because we'll do that closer to the Oscars. But just kind of talking about the nominees, who got snubbed, all that fun stuff. We know people like to hear that, and since we're a movie podcast, and we forgot the Golden Globes were on, we should probably care a little bit more about the Oscars when that comes around. So we'll be talking about all of that stuff. The fact that I'm Just Ken's probably not going to get nominated for Best Original Song, which is just a travesty. And even if it does get nominated, it's probably going to lose to I Was Made This Way or whatever the hell the Billie Eilish song is. Yeah, disappointing. But we'll be doing that next Tuesday night. So tune into that one. Put that on your calendars. I said this at the beginning of a couple other episodes we've done on this podcast. Not the Cinema Specialist, but other ones around the channel. Like and subscribe. If you're not subscribed, subscribe, because that's how you'll know when we're going live. I know, especially with this podcast, we kind of do bounce around a lot, kind of based on what time's available. This one's always one that we can do at any time. So now with the traders on and the trust on, and also doing our Survivor Second Chances, and then the Phil and Will show, which is covering a lot of NFL stuff, which is only going to be relevant for 4 or 5 days. We're trying to get that stuff out a little bit more regimented right now. And so these kind of get pushed around. So subscribe, like the video. It helps us. It goes a long way in getting us in front of eyes of other people and gets us into the algorithm, which is nice. All that being said, we are talking about Mean Girls, the musical, and Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. And this is one instance where we should probably start with the Marvel movie, because I feel like people care so much more about Mean Girls. But we need to talk about Mean Girls right away, because John's been dying to get this out of his system. I really, really, really disliked this movie. And I'll preface with this. I'm not a person who is a Mean Girls stan by any means. I like Mean Girls. I think it earns its classic status. I think it's a very enjoyable movie. I am very into that movie. And it has some great moments. It has great characters. I mean, characters across the board are phenomenal. However, I wasn't coming into this new movie being like, oh my God, I did say, how are they going to ruin it in this new one? But I wasn't coming into this like, if they remade Jaws or remade The Lord of the Rings or remade The Godfather, where I'd be like, oh my God, what are they about to do to this absolute cinematic masterpiece? So my expectations were low. But it wasn't like I was going to be hurt if this movie was terrible. But my God, this movie was terrible. I hated this movie so much. And I wanted to like it. I really did. And I just could not get into it. I found the music to be very bland. I found the story. They didn't know if they wanted to remake it or do something new. And it felt like they kind of went with a weird middle ground that just did not work. And it kind of drove me a little crazy. So, it was just disappointing. It was just a disappointing movie. And unfortunately, I gave it 1 star. Like, that's how much I disliked it. John, did you give it? I know you have this ranked as your favorite movie of 2024.
It's the only movie of 2024 I've seen, so it's just default my favorite movie of 2024.
It's your favorite.
But I also gave it one star. And in the days since I've watched it, I think that rating might be generous.
It's just like, I don't know what they were going for. Like, I understand, mm-hmm. you know, Renee Rapp is never going to be Rachel McAdams as Regina George, but like, she's fine. Like, I get it. But the version of, and she was in, was it Cock Blockers? She was in Blockers, right? I think the girl who plays the stupid one in this movie.
Maybe that sounds about right. I never saw Blockers.
You never saw Blockers? Oh, my gosh. You haven't seen that?
No, I haven't seen that.
That's a great inside joke right there that'll become more obvious to people as time moves on. She was not. Okay, so she was in Moxie, and she was in Senior Year, but she was not in Blockers. Okay, anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what she was in. Just a cartoon. Like, it's such a stupid character, and like, I really appreciated after watching this movie how good the casting of the original Mean Girls really was.
Yes.
Because only Lindsay Lohan was a household name at that point. I guess, no, because Rachel McAdams had done The Notebook the same year as Mean Girls, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so like, really, Lindsay Lohan was the only big name at that point. But the casting was just phenomenal in that movie, and everybody mm-hmm. plays it so well, and like, I felt like so much of this movie was just forced and forced and forced, and they couldn't decide if they what they wanted to do. And ultimately they just made a bunch of bad decisions. But I mean, what do you think? Cause you're much more into Mean Girls. You've watched Mean Girls a lot more than I have.
I do. I watch it, if not every year, every 2 years on October 3rd, I would say. But like, that's kind of the thing with Mean Girls, is that Mean Girls is this part of the cultural zeitgeist that really sticks out for people our age.
Yeah.
And if you haven't already, go back, listen to our Patreon preview where we talk about the original Mean Girls and we dissect it. And watching this movie made me really realize that something we had said in that podcast might not have been true. Because we talked in that podcast about how timeless the original Mean Girls is.
Mm-hmm.
Is it not as timeless as we thought?
Could be. But I think the story is timeless, but making a musical is never going to be timeless. The only timeless musical is The Wizard of Oz, in my opinion. It's the only one.
I mean, I disagree with that, but that's a whole other conversation.
What I'm saying is, like, in terms of a timeless musical, okay, so that's, I mean, obviously I love Cabaret, mm-hmm. but Cabaret is very much a, like, I think Cabaret is a timeless movie, but people aren't going back to Cabaret in that way. My Fair Lady very much feels like a 60s musical. Sound of Music is very much a 60s movie. It's a great movie. Mm-hmm. It's a masterpiece. It stands the test of time, but it is very much a 60s movie. When you sit down and you watch The Wizard of Oz, The Wizard of Oz is one of those movies that like every generation will like knows it.
And right.
It's in the cultural conversation. It's so massive. I mean, that movie's almost 100 years old. It's 85 years old this year. And everybody knows Dorothy and Toto and the Scarecrow and the Tin Man and the Cowardly Lion and the Wicked Witch. And then they made Wicked and all that. I think the problem is when you try to make something into a musical, the style of the music greatly impacts who your audience is going to be.
Yes.
And so, you know, the movies I just named, a lot of them have very classic music.
Mm-hmm.
This did not choose to go classic music route. And it felt like it was like generic songs from the mid 2000s. I kept thinking of BoJack Horseman. Whenever they would do a flashback, BoJack would be driving going, listening to a generic song from 1995 and like whatever would be playing in the background.
Yeah.
That's what this felt like to me. And the only one that really did anything for me was Revenge Party. But even Revenge Party just felt like a generic song from the mid-2000 teens. Like, it didn't feel like anything more. And so I still think the Mean Girls story and the Mean Girls movie, the 2004 movie, is a timeless movie. I think they just updated this to be very Gen Z, a musical, and the casting was horrific. It really was so bad. And like, I think all of these actors are good, especially Angouri Rice. She's been great in just about everything she's been in. The Nice Guys, we talked about her not too long ago in Spider-Man. Was it Far From Home?
Far From Home.
Like, she's very good. I really like her. However, she had nothing to work with here.
No. And a lot of that comes down to one of the things with musicals, just in general, as someone who's like quite into musicals, your musical numbers need to have one of two purposes. They have to be character development, or they have to push the plot forward. Mm-hmm. And in Mean Girls, it doesn't feel like any of these songs accomplished either of those goals.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Nothing really showed us more about the characters that we didn't know, that we couldn't learn out of a song. And it's really hard with this one. Phil, is this the first remake we've talked about on the podcast?
Oh, now I got to go look, because you never know, John, when they're going to slip a remake in on us. I mean, in terms of during this, I believe this. Well, I mean, what do you consider The Last Voyage of the Demeter?
I mean, that's an adaptation, I would say. I guess, like, we talked about John Carpenter's The Thing, which is clearly a remake, but it's different, right? It's a different telling of a story with a premise there. This is kind of the first, like, beat for beat remake I believe we've done.
Yeah, I think you might be right. And I think the problem is because, like, then Wonka is like an adaptation of Willy Wonka, and, you know, you go down the line. I think the problem was they did a beat for beat remake that they almost didn't mean to make a beat for beat remake. They skip through the best parts of the original. They speed through it with a song. Like, the whole Burn Book thing happens in 3 minutes in this movie.
Yeah, the Burn Book doesn't seem important at all in this movie. It just seems like a plot device rather than it's not built up. There's a weird moment in this movie where Regina tells them to stop paying attention to the Burn Book.
Mm-hmm.
And that just doesn't seem in character for the Regina that we know. And again, that's the problem with watching this movie with established characters that we know and we expect to act in a certain way. Obviously, some of these characters have been updated. Janice is openly gay in this movie, right? Mm-hmm. And that, I mean, that makes sense. 20 years later, a little more representation. Louis Crivella actually does a really great job in that role, I found. And for anyone to know, this is Moana. Like,
yeah, I know. That kind of, it's crazy. She really hasn't been in much since Moana.
No. Either. But she's also super young still.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's just this weird framing in this story. And this is what I think really was the most detrimental to the story. In the original Mean Girls, everything is told through Katie's perspective. Katie, as this outside observer in high school, gives the audience a surrogate into a world that they're not actually a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Because this movie's framed in a way where Janice and Damien are kind of like retelling the story instead, we don't get those intimate moments with Katie. I felt we didn't get to know Katie as a character at all in this movie.
I really agree with that. I felt, and again, this is where I go back, right? Like, it felt like they were assuming you knew the story and you knew the character. But then it was hitting the same beats without making them as well developed, without developing them as well. Oh, sorry, I couldn't think of the words. So it was like it wanted you to assume, but then it didn't want, but then it was also trying to give you new stuff. And like, even the whole Janice thing, right? Where Janice is openly gay in this movie. It felt like the spin on that and like the jokes related to that were only working because you had the previous knowledge that Janice wasn't gay in the original Mean Girls movie. It felt like a lot of like what was happening in this movie was hoping you remembered. I would have been interested. And I mean, I'll never be able to do this and you'll never be able to do this, but maybe there's somebody who's watching this who sees this movie before the 2004 Mean Girls. Mm-hmm. I would be fascinated to know what their opinion is. Because unfortunately, I think anybody who's going to do that is probably going to be like 15 years old or younger. So they're probably going to be very into this movie, you know, because that is who it's marketed towards. But I would be interested to know how people feel about the characters in this. Because to me, I got no character. I got none.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a lot to speak about the characters on this. But after I went to this movie, the friend I saw it with, we were both kind of astonished at how bad this movie was. I don't think I've wanted to leave a movie during its run more than I have wanted to leave this movie. We're just saying something.
From the moment they started singing, and I knew it was a musical, I went, oh, I'm not going to like this movie. Like, you know how, like, at the beginning of La La Land, they do Another Day of Sun? And some people, like, really hate La La Land just because they don't like Damien Chazelle. We talked about him. If you haven't listened to our Babylon podcast, go listen to the Babylon podcast. We didn't actually do a Babylon podcast, but I talk so much about Babylon in so many podcasts during the time it came out that it might as well be a podcast. But I think it was our 2022 year in review. I talked a lot about Babylon. But like when that first scene happened, I said, oh my God, I'm in the hands of a director who knows what he's doing. I know the scene. I understand the jokes. Now, granted, I was living in Los Angeles at the time. So like and I was working in the film industry. So I really understood the jokes. But I just got it. And I was like, I'm in. And this first song happened in this movie. And I said, I'm not in. They have not sold me. I am not invested in what I'm watching. And then the first song about sang by Katie Heron, I wasn't into. And then the My Name is Regina George song, I felt like was the most superficial song in the movie. And I get like she's superficial, but like it was surface level. That's what I mean. It was so surface level. It didn't want to dive in. I mean, you could have some killer lines in a song like that. I think about like Tangled, right? Like the whole song that they do where they're in the ugly duckling or the snuggly duckling, whatever it is. And everybody's got like their one-liners about what their dream is. You know, I have a dream. It's a great song. And it dives into like, you're like, ooh, I'm surprised they said that in this kids movie or whatever, this, that, whatever.
Yeah.
This could have gotten there and it just didn't in any of the songs. And yeah, it got to the point where I checked my phone a couple times. Like, what time is it? Like, I need this to end soon. And what's crazy is what really, really might be the most shocking part of this entire thing is this is longer than the original Mean Girls. And I feel like they do so much less in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't have to check my phone, but that's strictly because I knew the plot points that gave me like markers as to how far into the movie we were. But after I saw this, my friend and I discussing it, she asked me, is this just made for kids? Like, are we just too old to understand this movie? And luckily, there was a group of probably like 12, 13-year-olds standing beside us. And she just asked them, hey, did you guys see Mean Girls? What did you think? And even their response, their words didn't match the tone they were giving. They're like, yeah, we liked it. It's like, you didn't. You just think you should say that. And the thing is like those 12 and 13-year-olds were all like, but nothing compares to the original.
Yeah.
So even like 12 and 13-year-olds have already seen the original and have, and like, so I don't even know if we could find people who will see this version of the movie first.
Yeah. No, I don't think it'll exist.
No, but there's so many little aspects of this movie. When you, like with what you were saying, the very opening of this movie, it wasn't the song itself, like the singing itself, that didn't bring me in right away. Although, again, having Janice and Damien narrate felt weird, just like knowing the story stuff. If you think about Mean Girls, like the original 2004 movie, the opening is so, it catches you and brings you into that movie. It reels you in. Because it's that first person perspective of Katie's parents discuss like wishing her luck on first day, and you are caught off guard when you realize she's a teenage girl.
Yeah,
right. It's that little small beat of comedy. Instead, we have these people prefacing the events that are about to come and kind of spoiling some of the events to come.
Yeah,
and it's shot as if it was shot on a phone, which I guess they're doing for an effect, but but it took me completely out of this movie seeing an iPhone screen at the beginning of this movie.
Yeah, and what my biggest problem with that opening was, they made Janice the main character of this movie.
They Katie did. Heron Absolutely. Is
not the main character of this movie. And even the way, like, how many songs does the Moana actress sing in this? I think she has 4. And Katie Heron might have 2 or 3. Like, she has more than Katie Heron. So they made her the main character, even though she's narrating it. Like, if you go watch a Disney movie, because, right, this is a Broadway play. A lot of Broadway plays are based on Disney movies, or, like, try to emulate Disney movies. A lot of Disney movies try to emulate Broadway plays. They'll have a song at the beginning by a tertiary character. Robin Hood's a great example, right? Like, where Alan Adale is telling the story at the beginning, and then Alan Adale will pop up here and there in the movie and then comes up at the end. This, it felt like they wanted to do that, but then they made Janice such a main character of the entire story that you're like, okay, well, I'm more invested in Janice than I am in anybody else. But yeah, this movie definitely did more things. And this is where this one can't be timeless and the other one can.
Yeah.
TikTok, the Instagram, the iPhone, all of that stuff. Look, I know people don't believe me when they're listening right now, right? When they're listening right now in 2024 on January 18th, they don't believe me. All of that stuff is going to be dated one day. It is going to be so unbelievably dated. You're going to look back at that in 10 years and you're going to be like, oh, I remember TikTok in its whatever version. I mean, you have to think, when it was 2008, you know, we're talking 16 years ago, everybody had Facebook.
Facebook.
Everybody. Yeah. It was Facebook across the board. Now it's very hard to find people who go on Facebook because you don't have the wall anymore. You don't do any of the stuff there. If you would have told me it was always going to be Facebook, Facebook, Facebook. Now nobody cares. Facebook is definitely the lowest on the totem pole out of all those. It's like all of this stuff's going to be dated. So they made these decisions and it felt like they were targeting straight at Gen Z. But how do you get the people who love the original Mean Girls movies, who will admit when something in the Mean Girls cinematic universe isn't good, first of all? Mm-hmm. And then how are you going to get people who are younger than Gen Z? Because this movie is so targeted at Gen Z. And I don't know if the musical was targeted in the same way, but this felt so targeted at Gen Z. And that's fine. Like, again, that humor, generational humor, cross-generational humor isn't going to work every time. I go watch a Marx Brothers movie. I like Marx Brothers movies, but there's certain things that just go over my head that I don't understand. But this felt so targeted at a specific 10-year age range, and that was it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and what baffled me the most about this, who wrote this movie?
Was it still Tina Fey or no?
It's still Tina Fey. Mm-hmm. Who wrote the libretto for the musical?
I don't know that.
I take a wild guess because it's Tina Fey, also wrote the original movie. So every single one of these adaptations, and remember, it's all based off a novel in the first place, which was not written by Tina Fey. Yeah. But every subsequent release has been written by Tina Fey. So it felt really weird that there was just this tonal shift in the film. And I get it. Some of the jokes in the original don't work today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not going to go through the clicks the same way they go through the clicks in the original.
No. They took out any conversation of race in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
All of it. Like, we don't even get, like, the classic line of, then why aren't you black?
Yeah.
And like, excluding that, but it keeping a lot of some of the other jokes from the original kind of tells you where they were thinking with this. And they wanted to get rid of anything in this movie that could have been controversial.
Yeah.
Because they got rid of everything with race, which, you know what? That's fine. Whatever. Not a big deal. But they got rid of the scene at the beginning when Katie's introduced and Miss Norbury says hello to the black student instead of Katie, just like making an assumption, right? And that is a social commentary, though. Like, that's not a racist joke. That is a social commentary on the expectations of people and how they are misguided. And then you have everything to do with Coach Carr, you know, being in relationships with students. Great idea to cut that, because you know what? That's not cool.
But also, like, why is John Hamm even in this movie?
Yes, exactly. It's like, here's this character. He didn't even get like the, you like, at least in the original movie, Coach Carr had those couple of health class scenes, right? Where mm-hmm. where you got that little bit of interjected comedy, which was just kind of funny because it was juxtaposed with what Katie was actually doing at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think going back to the race thing, right? Like part of the joke of the original movie is she's a new student from Africa. And the assumption is like, oh, she's going to be a black student. That's not racist to assume that somebody coming from Africa is going to be black. I mean, if you look up the percentage of the population in Africa that's black, it is significantly higher than white or any other population. It just is. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't know. Like, to me, it's like they cut that because it's almost like they were scared. But what were they scared of? Like, there's no negative there. And like, I understand cutting the, you know, the certain parts where like they cut the Asian group, they cut the black group, like they cut the group, the cliques that were very stereotyped. But to like get rid of the jokes of like, then why even have her be from Africa? Like, who cares? Like, that's whole point is that this is how out of touch she is. She's a white girl from Kenya. I think she's in Kenya, but it's like she's a white girl who has lived most of her life in Kenya and been homeschooled. And now she's being dropped into high school. That's like part of the joke is she has never been anywhere. So I don't know. Just kind of crazy.
Yeah. And then we look at it. And I think what really hits this movie and like what really takes it down, they weren't willing to go as far into satire as the original.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that comes to the casting of this movie. These are some beautiful people. Obviously, they're in Hollywood. They're very beautiful people. They aren't like maybe younger generations find this the stereotypical hot, but it's not the stereo. Maybe I'm a 32-year-old and seeing people who are supposed to be in high school just doesn't do it for me, which would be
even though every one of them is like 25 years old. So, although Angourie Rice is 23,
yes, but these aren't the stereotypical hot people we had in the first movie that really emphasized the difference between these, like these groups. But I think the most condemning thing about this, how is Regina George mean in this movie?
She's not.
Right. If you think back to the 2004 movie, there are so many examples of Regina being
the only thing she does bad in this movie is when she kisses the guy. That's it.
Yes, absolutely. We don't have little things. We don't have the little things like, oh, I love your bracelet. That moment, which was so important and a catalyst to Katie sending the candy grams to break up her clique. We don't get the moments like her calling Taylor Waddell's mom and pretending to be, what is she? Planned Parenthood, right? Like, it's those, and I get it. That type of joke doesn't work nowadays because caller ID exists. I get that. We don't get the three-way calls because that's not a thing that really happens in today's technology. Like, those are the things that really age Mean Girls at this point, and you don't really realize it until you think about it. But those were also all of the things that showed us how socially manipulative Regina George was. And they showed us why she was mean. They made us, as an audience, root against her. Because she was mean. Uh-huh. And the other aspect of mean, the reason why it's called Mean Girls and not Mean Girl is because Janice is also super mean.
Yeah.
And we don't get that in this movie. There isn't this like animosity there brought on by just long-seated drama. Instead, it just kind of seems like, okay, we're just kind of being a dick to this person who's like, yeah, I mean, she's not the nicest, but she's not mean. She's a little rude, but she's not like intentionally harming people all the time like she did in the original. We just lose a lot of that character. Even when you look at Gretchen's character, for some reason they decided not to make her the daughter of the founder of the creator of the toaster strudel in this, which seemed like a weird thing to omit. But she doesn't feel like a second in command the way she did in the original. And then Karen's character is a complete flanderization of this original character.
Yeah, I don't even know what flanderization means, but it is It is. I agree with you, though. I get the context. Right? I can use context clues. Those are really the complaints. It's mm-hmm. why aren't they meaner? Why aren't we despising them more? And you know what it is? You can't make. Okay. You cannot make a movie like Mean Girls and be afraid of what you're saying. And that's just the truth. And I know that we live in a different world. I get it. 20 years later, it is a different world. But we cannot pretend that we are just in some magical utopia where nobody is mean to each other anymore. I can watch videos on the internet all day of high school kids literally murdering other high school kids in fights and stuff at high schools. Like, you can find those on the internet, okay? Of like groups of high school kids beating the crap out of other high school kids to the point where they die. I don't know what the reason is. I don't care what the reason is. I just know I saw it. And you can see these things. Mm-hmm. And like, what makes biting comedy of this genre is what Bottoms did. Yep. Bottoms was not afraid to make gay jokes. It wasn't afraid to make race-related jokes. It was not afraid to make any violent joke. And it was confident writing, confident directing, confident acting. Mean Girls felt like it wanted to make sure it stayed mainstream, and everybody came out like, oh, that was the least offensive thing I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations. Yeah. Nobody's offended, but everybody's bored. And you need to be willing to offend a little bit. I mean, look, I'm not going to sit here and say whether I agree or disagree, but why is somebody like Dave Chappelle still so popular right now? It's because he's not afraid to say things that are going to trigger the hell out of people. And it's look, that's his brand of comedy. He's been like that since the early 2000s. That's literally what he does. And that's why he is still popular. And, you know, there's going to be certain people who absolutely despise him, but there's going to be other people who absolutely love him. And this Mean Girls movie made me feel nothing. This would be like mm-hmm. a stand-up comedian going up there and telling like knock-knock jokes. That's what this felt like. Knock-knock jokes are always going to be inoffensive. I guess you could make some pretty dirty knock-knock jokes, but you can, it's an inoffensive version. And mm-hmm. you're 100% right. If you're going to be mean, be mean. Be mm-hmm. mean. The only one who's kind of despicable in this movie is Katie Heron. The rest of them aren't despicable.
And even then, like, and Gory Rice, I think, does a fantastic job of being the naive Katie Heron. She doesn't pull off the plastic Katie Heron.
Yeah.
Yeah. She doesn't pull it off. We don't get the same transformation we got from Lindsay Lohan in the original. We don't have that. Even the characterization doesn't really work, right? And we don't get that biting moment that we have in the original where Janice says, "You are a mean girl." We don't get that moment in here, and it feels just so lacking because, yeah, okay, it's the title of the movie. I get it. It's kind of cringe when that happens in a movie, but it's kind of also the point of the movie is that people in high school suck.
Yeah.
Everyone in high school sucks because everyone in high school is super mean to each other, and that hasn't changed over the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. No matter how much we want to lie.
Having taught high school. High school kids are some of the most brutal people you will ever talk to in your entire life, mm-hmm. because they think they're hot shit. They think that they are invincible, and they don't care what anyone says about them. But they also, at the same time, care what everyone says about them. They are such an enigma because they are developing human beings, and they need to learn these lessons. What's the main theme of the original Mean Girls?
I don't know. What's the original theme of the original Mean Girls? Where you tell me where you're going with this.
I would say it's along the lines of female empowerment and like standing up for each other and not letting this male dominated world turn you against each other and supporting each other, right? That's the whole point of the Miss Norbury speech in the gymnasium. And that is even lost because they're not calling each other sluts and whores in this movie. And let me tell you, kids nowadays still do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. People try to act like that's not a thing, but it is. It is. And like, I feel like the original one was a very female empowering movie, right? Mm-hmm. Of like, you know, stand up for yourself, be who you want to be. And like, this just wasn't. It's just like really, it just really, it just was going through the motions, in my opinion.
Well, so, look at all of the adult characters in this movie. Every single one of those actors was going through the motions in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, Tina Fey was so uninspired.
Completely. Tina Fey was uninspired. Tim Meadows was probably the best out of all of them. Busy Phillips did almost nothing in this movie. And Jenna Fisher was horrendous.
I mean, Jenna Fisher just has nothing to do.
Yeah. And her line deliveries prove it, because she just like says, like, every single line is just like so matter of fact.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel like there's any emotion there. I also don't understand the decision to not have a dad for Katie, because that like dichotomy between the parents was kind of pivotal in the first movie.
I don't know why they chose to do that either. And again, that almost felt like an inoffensive thing of like, we almost want to make it like, okay, single mom raising daughter, trying to do the best she possibly can, like, you know, all of that stuff. But then it never dives into that. So like, what is the point? Yeah. Like, at least like when she had both parents in the original, there was a point to it. There doesn't feel like there's a point to this.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I believe, I'm just double checking here, but I am fairly certain there are, some of the songs are cut from this musical. Uh-huh. They are, because a Broadway musical is obviously longer than this.
Yeah.
So some of the songs are cut, and maybe those delve into some of these things that we've been discussing. But again, I don't understand. I don't understand how you have these classic characters and you just try to change them just enough so that they seem slightly different, but are still reminiscent of the old ones. It just leaves a bad taste in an audience's mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, again, I like really did not like this. I think we should move off it and move on to the next movie. But like, I'm curious for the people who did like it. Mm-hmm. Why? Like, I'm genuinely curious. Why did you like it? Because I feel like, John, everything you've said is similar to how I felt. And like, I haven't heard anybody say that they like this movie. And that's not just like, I don't just run in circles of movie snobs. Like, I have not heard anybody say that they like this movie. So I'm curious. I really am. Jordan Alford had jumped into the chat here. And he is a patron. And I just wanted to drop the patron real quick. We dropped the Terminator yesterday, or 2 days ago now. Our $5 Tuesday 2 days ago was the Terminator. And we already have our schedule for February for our $5 Tuesdays. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking about becoming a patron, $5 Tuesdays in February are going to be The Sixth Sense, When Harry Met Sally, The Living Daylights, and Dune. And I figure I might as well read that off to all of you now. So you can get real amped if you're already a patron. Now you know what movies are coming. Those are all movies with big anniversaries this year. And if you're thinking about becoming a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. It's here at the bottom of the channel. All right, let's jump into Shang-Chi. Because look, Mean Girls, we talked about it. We hated it.
We did.
It's the worst movie I've seen this year, but it's also the best because I've only seen this one. Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. So let me say my 2 points and I'll let John go. One, I really like martial arts movies, so this was going to be hard for me. Two, I really appreciated that this movie tried to do different style of fighting. One of my big complaints last week when we talked about Black Widow and it's been for a couple weeks now is these movies are literally just the same thing all the time. It's the same fight sequences, the same stuff. Like, it's just the same nonsense. So I appreciated that at least. The CGI in this movie is the worst CGI I've ever seen in my entire life. It's actually the worst CGI. It's the worst CGI ever. And I'm saying that because it came out in 2021. This is the worst CGI in a Marvel movie. I couldn't believe how horrific it was. The story was fine. I was into it until I wasn't. I felt like this movie really took a bad turn in the second act, or in the third act. I'm sorry. I felt like the third act was very like rushed and everybody was just kind of throwing stuff at me. And I was like, what the heck is going on? So those are my main thoughts, my main takeaways. But John, you gave it better. So go ahead.
This is one of my favorite MCU movies. And I felt that the first time I saw it. I watched it again and I still feel that way. It didn't end up in my top three, which I had it in previously, because the CGI is that bad. I had to knock this movie down a half star because of how bad the CGI was.
The CGI is so bad.
It's horrendous. I've seen children make better animated graphics than this.
Mm-hmm.
It's inexcusably bad, but I really, really enjoy the direction this movie goes. It's the closest thing, obviously, we'll ever get to a Hong Kong Chinese film from the MCU. And it does it respectfully enough where I'm enjoying it. There are moments where we have Wire Fu happening, which is not something you see nowadays in movies. Yeah. And it feels fresh. It feels, like you said, it feels different than everything else we see. There is this beauty and this choreography to the fights in this movie that just really sets it apart from the rest of the MCU. Mm-hmm. I agree. The third act of this movie is by far its weakest points. And that's because it's still a Marvel movie that has to have this big bad that they have to fight and they have to overcome and everything. But the intimate family moments of this plot and the fact that this movie is really about a family feels so much more compelling than the movie we watched last week, Black Widow, that was also supposedly about a family.
Yeah, and like I agree with that. The family stuff was pretty well established in this. I like the thing with the father, and you know, Tony Leung is always fun to watch in these types of movies. You know, we get like, oh, why they fell in love, and it was over the fact that she was the only one who ever beat him, and you see like how he knows this. I thought it was a little weird of the reveal, the first time that it's revealed that he's like a kung fu master. You know, I thought that was a little weird on the bus. I mean, I get it's a cool scene, but like all of a sudden, like he's just in this brawl. I felt like that was pretty out of nowhere. Again, sometimes the Marvel movies don't like to tell their stories in order, and sometimes it works and sometimes it's totally unnecessary and they could have just done it a different way. So yeah, it's but towards the end, I started to be like, okay, why is his father so stupid? Like, why is he so dumb? Like, why can't he just like turn it off a little bit? And then I don't know, like it threw in the dragon stuff. It threw in the, we have to work together stuff. It threw in the work against each other. You know what, at the end of the day, this really came down to, John, it's the big question I ask a lot with these later MCU movies. Why? Just why? You know, that was a big thing for me. Again, while watching this movie, I was like, okay, I very much feel like I'm watching a kung fu separate story martial arts movie. That's it. And yeah, I get the Doctor Strange stuff with Wong and all of that, but it just feels so like tangential to everything else that's going on.
This is an interesting time in the MCU, right? Because we've done the big storyline and we don't know where it's going yet. Mm-hmm. The time this movie comes out, we have a vague idea of where we're headed, but we don't exactly know where we're going. And this feels like a setup movie with its post-credit scenes setting up.
Last post-credit scene was so bad.
It was. I agree. But we'll see how it plays out when we get the second Shang-Chi, because we know we are getting a second Shang-Chi. That's happening.
Now, has Shang-Chi come into other movies at this point or no?
No.
Okay, so like they bring in Shang-Chi, not in Eternals, not in, like literally Shang-Chi, Simu Liu has not been in another movie since this movie?
That is correct. But we also haven't had a team-up movie yet since this movie came out.
Okay, but why did this movie come out when it did then? I don't get it. Explain.
Wow. I don't know. I don't have an answer. I just know I enjoy it. That's okay.
Yeah, I'm seriously curious because then we have Eternal, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, Thor, Black Panther. It's like, okay, all of these movies. Why was Shang-Chi thrown in here 3 years ago now?
We're at a weird point in the MCU where they have declared there are kind of like three different worlds that they're focusing on, like three different types of stories they're focusing on. And none of it's really paid off yet. When we get to the end of Phase 4, maybe things will pay off. A lot of things changed around this time. This was around the time of the Disney-Fox merger, like actually going through. So the options for the MCU really opened up at this time. This is also just, I mean, I hate to say it, but the MCU also wanted to diversify their cast more.
Yeah.
Right? And this is a compelling Asian character that can star in a film, a genre film. How many times have I said I love Marvel when they do genre films that are also superhero movies rather than the other way around?
Go ahead, continue.
It just feels like this was this was a way of introducing a completely different perspective to the MCU that was sorely lacking beforehand, and making up for the whole Ben Kingsley and Iron Man 3 thing.
I mean, I like the Ben Kingsley stuff in this. You know, I think that's what you're kind of saying too. Like, I really like Ben Kingsley. I think Ben Kingsley in this movie, it kind of like makes even more sense. And I thought it was fun how like they really lean into that. And just the fact that they even got Ben Kingsley to be in this movie, like of all things, it just felt so random, but it really does work. Like I'm totally good with it. I agree with you that when they do, and that's like when my positives about Black Widow, right? When it leans into the spy elements, it's really good. When it gets away from the spy elements, it's really not. And Shang-Chi, like, if I liked martial arts movies more, that'd be great. But I don't. So it's hard for me to properly rate this one, right? It's kind of like when we did our top 100 movies, we talked about Akira. Just not really into that style of anime. We talked about Hero. Again, a martial arts movie. I don't really know what to tell you.
Like, also with Tony Leung.
Exactly. I mean, he's the biggest name you can have. It's weird to me that if you're trying to diversify your casting, this is how you choose to do it, because why not have it feel like it's more important to the overall story of everything? Does that make sense? Like, it doesn't feel like it's like, okay, great, we diversified the casting. Now, what do these characters have to do with anything?
I think this is leaning into the mystic side of the MCU, which is one of the like three traits that they're working on. So because they have like the mystic side, the space stuff, and the quantum stuff, I think.
The quantum is like what they get into right at the end of everything.
But they really want to focus on this mystic thing. They've already taken some traditionally Asian characters and changed them in this movie, obviously with like Trevor as the Mandarin not actually being the Mandarin, Tilda Swinton, and changing the origins of the Ancient One from Nepalese to
Tilda Swinton's not in this movie though.
Tilda Swinton was in Doctor Strange.
Yeah, but she's not in this.
No, but that character that she plays in Doctor Strange was kind of an Asian stereotype beforehand. Which is why they cast Tilda Swinton and changed the origins of the character. But that's what I'm saying is the Asian representation in the MCU has been pretty minimal, aside from what? Randall Park as random FBI guy?
Yeah.
And Wong? Like, that's kind of about it.
Yeah, wait. So Randall Park, which movie was he in again? Because that's Ant-Man, right?
Yes.
Okay, okay. It's all coming back to me.
I think one of the interesting things about this movie is who they decided to get to direct it.
Okay, so Daniel, for anybody who's not familiar with this guy's work, Destin Daniel Cretton. So Destin Daniel Cretton he directed Short Term 12, which is a very good movie. Very good. That like really put him onto the map. And then he did The Glass Castle, which didn't get as good of reviews. The Shack, which I've never even heard of. Just Mercy, which got okay reviews, but wasn't really seen. Okay, so again, this I got to be careful, right? But I do feel like this is Destin Daniel Cretton had done some good movies, but this very much felt like Disney being like, give me a really, really, really solid Asian director who's not the biggest name out there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like they were hoping to duplicate the success of Ryan Coogler with Black Panther, which didn't happen. And obviously this had the COVID issue and everything like that, so it's a little bit tougher. But yeah, Destin Daniel Cretton being the director of this feels really weird, because when you go and look at the other movies he's made, they are character studies. That's what he makes is character studies.
Yeah, so it seems really weird to have him doing this martial arts film. And the other
he's Hawaiian. I don't know. I mean, I know his heritage is probably he's half Japanese. So there you go.
Another awkward thing about just phase four of the MCU in general is that every movie they tried to make, Everything Everywhere All at Once, was all of them put together and done better.
Yeah, exactly. And now I understand, like, as I really watch these movies, it's so easy to understand why Everything Everywhere All at Once was such a success and why it, like, won Best Picture and stuff. Because I really like Everything Everywhere All at Once. I don't love it, but I totally understand why, like, they just really captured what the culture was looking for in that moment with that movie. Like, they just really nailed it, knocked it out of the park of, like, this is what people want.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's funny to watch two really unknown guys at the time make a movie that is so much better than what the MCU is putting out because they put the heart into it, and it's authentic heart, right? Like, it's not forced, which some of this movie can feel forced. I mean, again, the story for this isn't what really bothered me. It's more of just, I don't care about martial arts. The CGI was abomination, and I thought the third act was really bad. But I gave it 2 stars because, like, the other stuff I thought was fine. Like, I thought, I was like, man, am I about to give, like, a Phase 4 Marvel movie 3 stars? And then the third act happened, and I was like, whew, all right, cleared that one. But yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's just like a tough thing to firmly, like, put your finger on and be like, this is what, like, this is what is making these movies not succeed, that is making the that makes a movie like Everything Everywhere All at Once succeed. And like, when you try to bounce it, it's like, oh, well, it's this or it's that. At the end of the day, I think it's just heart in the characters. The characters feel so much more authentic in Everything Everywhere All at Once than they do in this, even though these movies are based on comic books where you could be pulling from all these different things to make these characters so well developed. And instead it's like, yeah, I'm like, I just beat the crap out of people, and like, my dad did this thing, so now I park cars. It's like, okay, but like, what makes you interesting? You know, I think about the line all the time from Everything Everywhere All at Once, where what's his name? The guy who won supporting actor. Was it?
Hee Kwan.
Yeah, thank you. Hee Kwan. When he says to her, you know, in an alternate reality, I would have been totally happy being your husband living above a laundromat. And like, that line should never work. Yeah. But it works so unbelievably well because you've gotten to know these characters and all their timelines, and you see what's important, and you see what works, and you see what hits. And like, with how insane Everything Everywhere All at Once was, they didn't sacrifice character for the story, for the action, for all of that. And I feel like this movie, it was like, okay, we got to get to our third act where a bunch of shit's going to happen. Get ready. And then everything just kind of happens, and it is what it is. Real Nicolas Cage, by the way, a little bit ago, said the CGI is an abomination. And it's the first time the real Nicolas Cage has gotten in here. So, yeah.
Well, speaking of the CGI is an abomination, did you realize the abomination was in this movie?
I did not. So you had mentioned that was going to happen, and I did not realize.
Tim Roth's character from The Incredible Hulk is the person fighting Wong in the Fight Club.
Oh, okay. So I did know who the heck that was then. Okay. Okay. Wait, that's just so funny though, because it's like at that point, why are they letting us see and be reminded of The Incredible Hulk? Why would they want us to be reminded of that?
Because that character appears in She-Hulk, which is about to come out after this.
Which is not getting a second season, right?
No, it is not.
I'm shocked. Sounded like such a good one.
I haven't watched that one, so I actually don't know how bad it is, but I have not heard good things.
I'm not the only people who have said good things about it are people who are going to say nothing but good things about everything that Marvel makes.
So, focusing on character again, because it has been a big conversation we've been having just today in general. I really appreciate the character moment when Shang is explaining to Katie about him going, like, being told to go assassinate this guy who killed his mom. And the anticipation you have, the expectation you have is that he's like, I couldn't do it because I was, you know, a 15-year-old kid. I couldn't kill someone. Mm-hmm. And then you find out that he did kill him.
Yeah.
Like, that is a good character. That's arguably one of the best character moments we have had in the MCU. And it's not even, it's just like, we could have done so much more with it.
I agree, though. That was kind of like a nice little surprise. And And like, again, this movie kind of delved into like the whole honor thing, right? Like a lot of these martial arts movies are about like honor and family and like the journey and overcoming and, you know, whatever, overcoming your weaknesses and everything. And this movie really wanted to focus in on that stuff. And when it is, it's working. It is. I think, you know, what all these movies run into is the problem of the third act has to be the same thing every time.
Yes.
And this is a movie where like, it's a martial arts movie, but like if you go watch Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, it's not like Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon ends with like an epic battle that has to happen between like dragons and all this other shit. Yeah. Like it's just, I forget exactly how Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon ends, but I can guarantee you that it's not with dragons fighting each other to suck the soul out of each other.
Yeah.
And so like when you almost lose the character moments, like as you mention these things, I'm like, oh, that was a good moment. That was fun. That was interesting. And you almost forget about those moments because I guess I watched this movie on Sunday, maybe Monday, whatever day it was. And you like forget those things happened because you're so focused on all of the nonsense that's surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, it's the sensory overload that the MCU gives you so many times, and especially with these third acts, where how much more compelling is this movie if we actually just get a martial arts fight between father and son at the end of the movie, and that's the end of the movie.
Also kind of crazy that it pretty much throws the martial arts stuff away so that it can have a massive battle.
Yes. It's so unfortunate because I think the choreography in the training fight between Michelle Yeoh and Simu Liu is so good.
So well done, yeah.
It's so beautiful. Just that moment of like the opening of the fist. Such a huge character moment with no words spoken.
And like, even in that first bus scene, which I've been kind of like mocking a little bit, like it's so smooth. It's very, very smoothly done across the board. Like Simu Liu moves, man. Like he is good. And I really appreciated that. The choreography on that is really well done. And again, I like that it was trying to do something different. It's just like it abandons that different to make everything samey. By the end. And it's like, you know, I think about in all these martial arts movies, there's always a move, right? The five finger death punch, whatever finger skadoosh, you know, whatever from Kung Fu Panda. There was another one that just came to mind and now I can't think of it, but there's always a move. There's always something that takes people down. And instead it just went like, okay, like all of a sudden Awkwafina can shoot arrows.
Yeah.
And she just like learned in a montage and now she's shooting an arrow through the thing's neck and like she becomes the hero. And it's like, what, why? There's no move.
Well, I mean, there's a character moment in that, I think, because
there is, but why is she getting the big hero moment?
I know it is a little weird, but Awkwafina is kind of one of the big points of contention in this movie for a lot of people. Because let's be real, a lot of people either love or hate Awkwafina.
She's very polarizing. She does have a very obnoxious voice. Personally, if you haven't seen The Farewell, I highly recommend it. Aside from that, I haven't really liked her in anything else she's been in.
I really enjoy her in this movie. And I think that her character as this much more Americanized Asian character really works in this story.
Mm-hmm.
And it really helps when we get to the compound and Tony Leung's there. And when we like asked her her Asian name or her Chinese name and things like that, right? Like, those are these moments that I think really help this film. And I also just think Wen Wu's one of the best villains we have in the MCU.
Is that the name of Tony Leung?
Yeah, Tony Leung's character is Wen Wu. I think he's so compelling to know that he's this, essentially this tyrant that ruled the world with these 10 rings and he fell in love and then stopped doing it. But then as soon... And it's another thing that the movie does really well is that when Shang-Chi is talking about his mother, he says she died. She doesn't say she's killed. Mm-hmm. And then we get the reveal that she's killed. He was there. He watched it happen. And then we get the moment that his father blames him for it. He was an 8-year-old child. Right? And those are these beautiful moments in this film that we just don't get in so many of these MCU films. We look at the other MCU films that have daddy issues, which is like a lot of them, makes you really wonder if like Marvel creators just have a lot of daddy issues. But like Iron Man, the daddy thing,
it's LA
relationship. Yeah, that's true. the father relationship between Tony and Howard, like, never really completely fleshed out. We get that moment in Endgame, but it kind of feels cheap at that point. Mm-hmm. We get a better father-son thing in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 between Kurt Russell's character and Chris Pratt and everything. But this just does it so much better because this is actual resentment between these two. These are two people who hate each other. And when Shang-Chi says, "I'm going to kill him," you mm-hmm. believe him. And well, that is just so good. And it feels
there's definitely motivation, right? Like, there's yeah. real motivation in it, which is also nice. Because sometimes these movies, there's not real motivation. You feel like it's motivation just forced for the sake of being motivation. But this is real motivation. I mean, John, you very rarely do it. And I'm not going to actually change my rating. But as you're talking, I'm like, maybe this should have been a 2.5-star movie. Like, maybe I wasn't giving it enough benefit of the doubt throughout the entire thing, and I was distracted by the CGI and wasn't just appreciating yeah. the story. But again, it's like martial arts, CGI, that's really bad. That distracts me. Like, that takes away mm-hmm. from my viewing experience, and maybe I shouldn't have let it. Maybe I was being a baby watcher, you know?
To be fair, the CGI is almost bad enough to distract me, who really enjoys this movie.
Yeah, it seems like and like I could figure that out while I was watching it, but especially as you're talking about it, it's like there's so much more depth to this movie mm-hmm. than a movie with that bad of CGI should have. And maybe like yeah. a movie like Shang-Chi would be so much better if it just wasn't a Marvel movie. You know, just like I always say with Black Panther. Probably. Black Panther's not a Marvel movie. Black Panther is such a better movie.
Yeah. I mean, these third acts are what killed these movies a lot of the time, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes the it's third acts act, like Black Widow, but
yeah.
Sorry, what? Third acts
and the Philly costumes.
Yes, but there aren't silly costumes in this one. They're very,
yeah.
It feels a lot more like the costumes in this feel a lot more similar to like the 2000s X-Men's costume,
mm-hmm.
where they tried not to be cartoony, and it felt nice because of it.
Yeah, I have this currently ranked at 17 out of 25. I mean, I could probably go higher. I have so many 2.5-star movies, though. You know, and I didn't mm-hmm. give this one 2.5. So maybe I should have given this one 2.5. So I could have bumped it up and put it, you know, in like my top 15. At the end of the day, it's like, am I ever going to watch Shang-Chi again? No. Do I feel bad that maybe I ranked it a little too low? No. It'll do fine without me.
Yeah, that's fair. I just really like how it deals with family, how it deals with grief. Tony mm-hmm. Leung's, like, Wen Wu going back to the rings when he loses his wife. Huge character moment.
Yeah.
The fact that he is susceptible, like, even ignoring how terrible the whole soul stealer of it all is in this movie, the fact that it could prey on him because of how weak and desperate he was to get his wife back,
mm-hmm.
huge. Like, there are these, it's so close to being an exceptional superhero movie. If that third act was just handled differently, and, you know, CGI wasn't as bad.
Yeah, I mean, the CGI is really what kills it. But you're right. I mean, if it was a different handling of that third act, this is probably close to a 3-star movie. Because I really was digging it until it just turned into, mm-hmm. like, montage set up for the blast fight.
Yeah.
Blast fight happens, montage over. Okay, good, move on, done. Like, whatever, happened. I'm not mad, though, that I'm getting a little break from the MCU. Yeah. I'm not mad.
Yeah, I think taking 2 weeks to digest the Eternals is a good call.
I know. I've heard that I'm not going to be very happy with that one. And I've heard that the movie itself is just like flat out terrible. So woohoo, can't wait, as they say. Yeah, so next week, as I said earlier in this podcast, we're taking a break and then we'll come back to the Eternals, but we're going to take a break and we're going to do Oscar reactions. So the Oscar nominations come out next Tuesday on January 23rd. We'll be doing Oscar reactions on that day. You know, BAFTAs were shocking. Barbie yeah. did not get a Best Picture nomination. So, I mean, maybe we're in for some pretty big shocks at the Oscars. I mean, Barbie's locked in as an Oscar nominee. Like, who are we kidding? But
they get 10. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, they're going to definitely get anything in, but it was pretty shocking. And I wasn't too mad about it because Barbie did not make my top 10 of last year. And I haven't even seen a lot of the movies that people are talking about for Best Picture. So, but that'll also kick off. If you want to be a $5 patron, patreon.com/thespecialist, we do $5 Tuesdays. It'll also kick off next Tuesday. once the nominations are announced, John and I are going to do our best picture breakdown for $10 patrons. So that means we'll be putting out an episode dedicated to each of the 10 best picture nominees. Some of them we've already done, Barbie, Oppenheimer. We've already done those movies on this podcast, the holdovers. But we'll give like a more in-depth 30 minutes, how we feel it's going to do at the Oscars, previous awards, all that stuff. Give kind of like a thorough breakdown, its chances of winning the big one, all that fun stuff. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, that'll be starting probably late next week. We have to find time to actually record it. And then once we record it, we'll start putting them out. But, you know, there'll be 10 extra episodes there. So if you're a $10, if you're a $5 patron, if you're not a patron, but you want to try out our Patreon for a month, think about becoming a $10 patron starting the end of next week, because that would be when you're going to get the $5 Tuesdays. You'll get the other Oscar Best Picture Breakdown stuff, and you'll get all the other Survivor stuff we're putting in there. From what I'm getting from the Discord, people are having a hard time keeping up with all that we're putting out. You know what? I'm honestly a little proud of that, because for a while it was a little too easy to keep up with all we were putting out. And obviously with shows like The Traitors and The Trust, and then John and I doing this, and then we got the interview with Bruce, and we've been doing the Survivor Second Chances thing. There's a lot. My head's spinning too, and it'll slow down a little bit once we actually get into the normal kind of cycle of Survivor. So appreciate you all listening. Keep an eye out for next Tuesday night. That's when you should be looking for John and I to do our Oscar reactions. That'll be fun. Also, we did decide, and John, I'm going to announce this now. We decided that after phase four is over, we are going to jump into something else. And we will come back to phase five in the weeks leading up to the release of Deadpool 3, which releases on July 26th of this year. So we'll take a break, and then we'll start phase five as we lead into that. But so for the month of March, we're toying around with the idea of doing a bracketed type thing. So think about what you might want to see. And each episode in March, if there's 4 weeks in March, we would be doing a different type of bracket every week. It wouldn't just be like, oh, well, this one won this week. Because it's hard to do that with a podcast, because you end up being like, well, what's better, The Godfather or The Shining? What's better, Psycho or Casablanca? And then the next week you're like, well, what's better, The Godfather or Casablanca? And it's like, okay, like we're having the same discussion we just had last week. So think about what we might be able to do as a like potential bracket or something like that. And then we have a totally new topic coming up. My wife's suggestion at the bottom is a horrific one. One of her more embarrassing moments in the public here, but just going to call her out there. But yeah, definitely keep an eye on, or think about that. Leave some comments. We are all ears for this type of stuff. So let us know. And thank you all so much for listening. Thanks for putting up with us through this. I know it's not always fun to listen to us talk negatively about movies, but John really likes Shang-Chi. Mean Girls just never needed to be made. So that's it, guys. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you next week.